Rabbi, for Parshas Miketz, if you could open up, if you have, there were some chumashim here. Okay, if not, I'll read the psukim to you. If you don't have them in front of you,
I have them.
Okay, that's great. And we're going to begin here on page 105. Okay, this is Perek Mem Gimel in Sefer Bereishis. There should be more Mara Mekomos pages. Oh, here, I'm sorry. My mistake.
There wasn't so many of these.
Yeah, I think Gershon might have gathered a whole. I'll just give them out. Close the door if you don't mind. Thanks. Hara'av Kaved Ba'aretz. The famine is very, very tough in the land of Canaan, and there's nothing left to eat. Now, if you recall, the point that we've gotten to here is a very critical point, because Yosef has not only incarcerated Shimon, but he also got a hold of the brothers, catching them, we say in the Israeli say al-kham, you know, guilty of as accused of stealing the amtachas Yosef. And here Yosef, the viceroy of Mitzrayim, says to them, don't come to see me unless you bring down the youngest brother that you've told me about, meaning Binyamin. And of course, Yaakov Avinu has been, to understate it, has been very hesitant in allowing the brothers to take Binyamin down. But Vayomer Elav Yehuda, when Yaakov instructs the brothers to go down to Mitzrayim, Yehuda objects and he says, we can't go down without Binyamin. And in Pasuk Dalet he says, Yeshcha Meshalech Esachinu Itanu, Nerda V'Nishbara Lecha Ochel. We're willing to go down, but on one condition, and that is that we take Binyamin down, because that's exactly what
the man wanted.
Exactly, that was the condition that he established. V'yem eicha mishaleach, if you're not going to send Binyamin down, lo nerid, then we refuse to go down to Mitzrayim. And before we see Yaakov's response, I just want to sort of skip a little bit. And Yehuda makes a very impassionate plea to his father. That's in Pasuk Ches, especially. And he says, Anochi Arvenu Miyodi Tavakshenu. He establishes this concept of Arvus, meaning that we'll do whatever we can, and we will make sure to bring you back. To bring you back Binyamin, etc., etc. In the middle of this dialogue here, before Yehuda successfully perseveres over his father and convinces his father to send them down with Binyamin, we have in one pasuk here the response of Yaakov, and that's pasuk Vav. Vayomer Yisrael. You know, usually when the Torah shifts from Yaakov to Yisrael, it's indicative of some sort of a special status. You know, now he's setting the pattern for all generations. We should learn from Yisrael. We are the Bnei Yisrael.
Bottom of page 105.
Lama Hari Osem Li. Now, when you see these three words, Lama Hari Osem Li, why have you done this evil to me? Who is the subject or the victim of the blame here? Who is being blamed here?
The brothers.
And then he says about Yosef, not knowing of course that he's Yosef, Lahagid la ish ha'od lachem ach.
Why did you tell him you had another brother?
That sometimes you give too much information and it backfires. So I want to learn with you an insight. Now, today's shiur, if it's successful, I never know what's going to be at the end, is going to have two parts to it. Part one is the insight of the Tolna Rebbe to Yaakov's response in these words, Lahagid La'ish. Those are the two key words. And he builds mountains in the sky on those two words. But I'm hoping, again, Jeremy, you may not be able to stay that long, but if we can, at around, let's say, 11:35 or so, I would like to study a whole different dimension to the story of Yosef and his brothers and connect it to Chanukah. So if you have the patience and the perseverance, you know, President Trump said about the Jewish people, they're resilient people, you know, they're able to persevere. So we're going to test that out today in the classroom. And if we live up to this calling, so this is just what we're doing now with the Tolna Rebbe is part one. And I'm hoping to get to part two, which I have pages. I'm holding on to the pages because if we don't get to it, I don't want to disappoint you. And I gave out the pages and we didn't get a chance to study them. Okay. Now, looking at this puzzle, okay, what is the Tolna Rebbe's point? I don't expect you to know the answer to that question because you haven't read the essay yet. The essay, by the way, should be about 4 pages long. Let me just make sure that I photocopied the right pages for you. What number does it say on top?
153.
Okay, so it should be 153, 154, and half of 155.
Yeah.
That you have?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Look, here's the deal. Yaakov is well aware of what transpired in the meeting between Yosef, the viceroy of Egypt, and the brothers. The brothers have told over to Yaakov more than once, you know, the story and the give and take. And basically, the bottom line is that the viceroy of Egypt is accusing them of what?
Spying,
of espionage. And the entire story about, you know, that they're now being accused of stealing the Amtachas, Yosef, and it's all about this very harsh accusation against the brothers on the part of the viceroy of Egypt. I call him viceroy. I mean, you'll decide what word you want to use. Every country, I guess, has a different word, but you get my point, right? Now, let me ask you a question, which is really the Rebbe's naive question. There's such a simple answer to this question. Who's really guilty here when you think about it? You know, if you want to point the finger of guilt here at somebody, and again, Yaakov is well aware of what goes on here. Who's guilty, would you say?
Yosef.
Why Yosef? Yosef. Yeah, I know what you meant by Yosef. Sorry, yeah. Yosef in his guise as the viceroy of Egypt. I mean, there's really no justification. Neither for his accusation against them that they are spies, nor his accusation against them that they stole anything. They brought back whatever they took. And they didn't even take it. It was planned.
It was planted.
Planted. Very good. So, Harvey, if you were in Yaakov's position and you wanted to point your finger of blame, Hari Osem, that's the word here, Hari Osem means you have done me evil. Who should you be pointing the finger of blame at?
The brothers.
Not the brothers. Because the brothers were in all naivete, you know, they were responding in great innocence to a question that came from the viceroy of Egypt. And they're supposed to calculate, you know, who, what, where, you know, if they tell him that they have another brother, he's going to force them to bring down the brother. I mean, that's asking a lot. Again, you could argue that clearly the brothers didn't have to go that far. But, you know, you're really picking up the tuffel instead of the ikar. You know, who's the ikar one at fault over here? Wait, just give me a minute, David, to develop the question, because the godless of this essay is not to answer the question, but to ask the question. What the Rebbe wants to do here in this presentation which I was very taken by, is to accomplish two goals. Goal number one is to read the language, the words of Yaakov Avinu, which are now being immortalized for all eternity in the Torah Kedosha, and see what we can hear in those words. And number two, I think what the Rebbe is accomplishing here is he's taking us almost in a time machine back as if we were experiencing that whole give and take. Now, Yaakov Avinu, the Rebbe points out, has a tremendous power. And I'm going to give you a hint to the answer to the following question. Jeremy, let's see if you can get from my hint, you can figure out the answer to my question. Rachel is my hint. What power does Yaakov have that nobody that you and I know of have that power? It's a Hebrew word that has four letters to it. The first letter is Kuf. Still not. The second letter is Lamed. Not Kali Abishal, baby. The third letter is Lamed, another Lamed. And the fourth letter is Hey, Klala. Why does Rachel die? Yes. Who cursed Rachel? Inadvertently, not consciously. It was Yaakov Avinu. Yeah. Rashi points it out that the tragic death of Rachel was because Yaakov, when Laban was running after them looking for the trophim, and Yaakov made a statement that, you know, whoever was guilty, I'll let them die. Little did he know that Rachel had stolen the trophim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the following: when a tzaddik like Yaakov Avinu goes there, he makes that decree, even though it was unknown to him, is Mekayim. Says the Rebbe, Yaakov is sitting in Canaan. It's a couple of days' journey to Mitzrayim, but he has power over that person who's sitting at the, you know, at the leadership. What word should I use? The mantle of leadership, the viceroy of Egypt. What could he do with him? Did you ever hear the word a whammy?
A
whammy. Okay, that's an American word, I guess. Probably comes from Hollywood.
How about a roast? He could roast him.
He could roast him, he could whammy him. Whammy is when you put a whammy on somebody. You know, you spook him out. Yaakov has that power. And look what Yaakov says about this viceroy of Egypt. Then the floor is yours. He says, Lahagid la'ish. Notice what happens over here. No accusing finger, no blame at the ish. And not only that, the word ish is always indicative of a certain chashivus. When you have covered for a person and you respect him, you call him an ish.
Aish Moshe.
Aish Moshe, yeah, you find it all over. The anoshim in Parshas Baloscha. So the Rebbe wants to know, on a psychological level, that's what I love about the Rebbe's sichot, he really penetrates below the surface to learn from words that are immortal, that are eternal in the Torah, lessons about our morality, about how we have to live, and how we have to speak, and how we have to think. From Yaakov Avinu, we learn an unbelievable lesson here, but we're not ready for the punchline yet, because Doc is going to tell us what he thinks about this. But again, do you sense the Rebbe is kaviyochel upset here? What's going on over here? Okay, they shouldn't have offered the information about Binyamin, Mahin, Aher, Tzarik. Okay, there's a time. You have some sort of claim against the brothers that somehow naively they offered too much information. But come on, Yaakov. This is not where the blame should be pointed. Lama harayosim li. You guys did this to me. Terrible. Lahagid l'ish. Oh, the ish. You know what Yaakov should have said in his mind, at least that's the way we feel, that this ish is your classic example of what? Starting with a big A.
Anti-Semite.
An anti-Semite. That's who he is. He's a no good anti-Semite. Because the Egyptians, you know, they didn't harbor too much great love for the Ivrim. You know, there are 50 million examples of that in these parashiyos. And here comes a group of 10 Ivrim, you know, these 10 Hebrews. You know, it's like in the Soviet Union, you know, when you had a passport, it said Ibre on it, you know. You're a Jew. The Russians wanted to know that on your passport it said you were a Jew. That's the famous joke about the Russian who makes Aliyah, and they call him a Russian. So he says, when I was in Russia, they called me a Jew. I came to Israel, they called me a Russian. You know, that famous Jew. It's a famous joke. But, yeah, go ahead.
I was asked for a moment ago.
Oh, maybe.
But maybe you really said it. But you said they in all innocence said they had a brother. But I said they were under tremendous psychological pressure. They were being accused of being spies.
Right.
You can't blame them. They were petrified.
Correct. So that's why I say, Dr. Blatsky, the response of Yaakovim should open l'tameas ha'ainayim. It should open our eyes to ask, what is this all about? And again, we've summarized pretty much the first three paragraphs. Just take a look inside if you want to underline anything. He says on the third line of the third paragraph, Mayacha social Yaakov el oso mitzri. What is the relationship of Yaakov to that no good Egyptian? Hayimu Magade from a kal oso? Does he curse him? Does he humiliate him? He should be speaking words of harshness against the mitzri. No. Lahagid leish. Hadavar Azel Omer Darshin. And you'll take a look, he says, at the next psukim. If you take a look fast forward, this is on page 106. And again, once again, Vayomer Elehem Yisrael Avihem in Cain Efo Zos Asu. Here is where Yaakov capitulates, he agrees to send Binyamin.
Send him a present.
The word mincha is always used for something that's meant to have chashivus, significance. Yaakov Avinu and his tribe, his household, they're on the verge of starvation. But we're going to dig up the best that we can from mincha. So you and I would have said, well, that's what you call buttering someone up. You know, you want to get a good something good from the viceroy. Come on, says the man. This is Yaakov. He's not a man of chanifa, of flattering someone. He's not a man who is trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. And not only that, the viceroy, come on, very nice. You know, Yosef is sitting on whatever wealth and food and so that, you know, in the entire globe, and Shkayev, you know, send me a little Zimra Saharit. He sends him a little honey, you know, with some nuts and almonds. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's it all about? And the Rebbe says that this is an amazing lesson that's being taught here by Yaakov Avinu. He says the following. This is the paragraph of Hemshech HaPsuk. He says, Ha'ish HaMechubad on the fourth line. Sorech Gav Mincha Mimishpacha Mur Eves Beknan. Borolonu She Yaakov Rachok Michanufa. Yaakov is not interested in flattering here, in false flattery. Of Echad Bepeh, Echad Belev. That's antithetical to Yaakov's very essence. Yeah, I'm going to give him a gift because I hate his guts, but you know, he deserves the worst humiliation, and he should be taught and fed, and I should be cursing him and putting a whammy on him. Roasting him, is that what you called it, David? I should be roasting him, and instead, I'm going to send him some roast tvash. He says, well, what's going on over here? And the answer is that even though you and I would say, HaShalit HaZeh, this viceroy, Mizgolel Ba'alila, Alila means libel, it's false libels that he's hurling. Shfela, it's low. Al Zera Kodesh, for the holy household of Yaakov Avin. And we would therefore think that the Zake, meaning Yaakov, he shouldn't be sending him honorable gifts. Eliyakalenimratos. You mean the most profound whammies. And he says that even when Yaakov Avinu turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a tefillah, look at Yaakov's tefillah, this is in Pasuk Yud Dalet, also on page 106. It says, V'kel Shakai Yitein Lechem Rachmim Lefei Ha'ish. Again, Lefei Ha'ish. You know, if he's talking to God about an anti-Semite who is issuing libels against the Jewish people and trying to destroy and threaten the whole nation of Israel, you know, he doesn't have to say to the Almighty God, Ha'ish. And here we turn to page 154. Again, I'm just highlighting parts of the text. And he says the following. We're going to learn something very profound here. You know, a person who is granted this great gift of speech, you know, he can use it for something creative and constructive, he can use it, Chas v'Shalom, for something destructive. And the purpose of speech could be misunderstood by us as a way of, this on the second line, lifrok taskulim, if you want to underline those words.
Where is that?
Second line, on page 154, lifrok taskulim. What it means is that sometimes you're in a state of tiskul, of psychological anguish, and in order to let despair, in order to let loose and sort of like get rid of that anger that's bubbling up inside you, you can misuse the power of speech and you could start cursing people and getting angry at people and humiliating them. And you go back to the source of your tzara and you say, well, this tzara came from so and so. And I'm going to be Magadef and Macharif and Makal, such a person. Hashiflut Hashamtsut Lufroket Haskul below Histaknut. Look at this. If Yaakov Avinu is not facing Yosef, the viceroy, the Shalit of Mitzrayim, face to face, he has no problem, he shouldn't be at all inhibited to let out his anger against this person and use every rotten word in the dictionary. When the imut comes, when the confrontation becomes face to face, okay, then you have to evaluate your mutual powers. You know, who's going to win in this frontal confrontation? And if you think you could win the battle, then you can, you know, you can attack belligerently and use your mouth. Or you could decide, you know what? I think I better be a little diplomatic about it. I don't know if I can take on all of Mitzrayim. You know what I'm saying? But if you're not in his presence and there's no face to face confrontation, ulah. Next paragraph. However, here's where he turns everything around upside down. We're talking about the Bechir HaAvot and the Bonav HaKadosh. And Rabotzai, this is going to set a very high standard for us. I don't know if we can live up to it. But you know, when we learn about the Avos, we're talking about something on a high level. So we have to at least get a glimpse of what it means. He says, Etzlam, when it comes to them, these are the Avos, the Dibur, that is the greatest gift that God bestows upon man, and it's being given for the purpose of good. Use your speech for good. If you can't use it for speech for good, don't use it at all. Kasher nitan b'emtza'ut koach zelavaker bikoret. You sometimes could use that power of speech and you can criticize someone, and the person who's listening to you can take a message and perhaps build for the future and do better in the future. Then say what you have to say and be very straightforward. Lama hariosim. There's no diplomacy here. There's no fancy, nice language. Oh, you're a wonderful guy. No room for diplomacy. The brothers have to understand that if they're going to go into this confrontation all the way and stand in front of the viceroy, they better be very careful about every word that comes out of their mouth. There are no excuses here. Lama hariosu. However, biyachas lezulat kol od sheino nimtza b'matzav bo nitan levarer oto pesha gishato. If you think you want to blame so-and-so who's not in front of you, hold your tongue. You don't know what's going on. There may be facts that are concealed to you. You're not in front of him. You're not in a frontal face-to-face confrontation. then don't use or misuse, as he would say, your koach hadibur hanala, this highest bestowal upon, that God bestowed upon man, the power of speech. To use your speech in a way that you just want to let out your anger, bilti merusan, without any hold back, without any inhibitions. Prikas tiskul, yeah. I just want to get rid of all that anguish and that anger, that despair that's pent up inside of me. No. Ha'adam amur lirasein et atzmo. Even in the most difficult situations, man is called upon to hold back, to rein himself in. How do you spell that word? R-E-I-G-N, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Rein your mouth when it comes to your relationship to someone else. If someone's in front of you and you think you can give them criticism, there's no room for diplomacy. But when you're talking about someone who's far away, and you believe that on the surface of it, the facts of the on the ground seem to clearly indicate that he's a no-good bum, he's an anti-Semite, he's trying to undermine you, hold back, control your mouth, and lola hagiv b'charifut, and don't respond in a wild, sort of very sharp, harsh way. Lifro kasim, to get rid of all your anger. But lahavlig means to control your mouth, lirasein, to rein it in, livlomit yitzarah, and think about the possibility that, who knows, maybe there's a divine plan here. And maybe, just maybe, this man who's the viceroy of Egypt, who is supporting whom, Rabosai? The entire world. And that Yaakov knows. Whatever you'll say about this man, and ultimately the chances for the household of Jacob to survive, is all depends upon this man's goodness, on his compassion. And Chazal tells us in the Medrash that Al Yaakov, we can say about Yaakov, may Olam lo Omar Dover Shal Batola. Yaakov never let out of his mouth anything that's meaningless, nothing that's insignificant. Every word is significant. And anything that Yaakov said in his world, in his mouth, is going to come true. Mishamayim, there's going to be a divine providence to make sure that everything that Yaakov says is going to come to pass. And that's the Mesa Olai Rachel that we mentioned before here in this paragraph. We see in Yaakov Avinu's case, Ad Kama, this is the bottom of the page, going on to page 155, Yeshli Hizoyer B'dibur Miyusar, how careful Yaakov Avinu is about his speech. He's all the way away from Mitzrayim and Canaan. He's trying very hard to understand the logic of this, the actions of this Mitzri, of the viceroy of Egypt. And it's logical to assume he cannot find any justification, any merit in what Yosef has done. What are the statistical probabilities that this strange behavior pattern of the leader of Egypt could be justified as doing something good? The chances, the statistical probabilities are very, very slim. But yet, ulam, again, the word ulam is always a key word in the Rebbe's Shmuzim, that's line 4. Nevertheless, there still is one possible probability, call it 1% chance, that maybe there's some logic in what he's doing. Maybe there's a program here. Maybe there's a purpose and a goal. And therefore, control your mouth, Yaakov. You have not yet come to the bottom of this. You have not yet come to a face-to-face confrontation. Kol od shelo nitan l'labein et hadavar, until you can absolutely be sure and clarified about this mitzri, that he has some sort of a cheskas kashrus. This man is holding up, he's sustaining the entire world. He's like Hercules, he's holding up the whole world. Let's see what it's all about. And the Rebbe ends this shmooze by saying, Zalimut gadol min ha-parasha, that although our emotions get the best of us, and very often we speak in a way that indicates our frustration, our despair, the difficulties of situations we're in, but nevertheless, legalot savlanut, we have to reflect and express in our lives ipuk, you know, tolerance and control of our language, and making sure that we are merasein, we even control our will, Lefrikas tiskulim. You remember that phrase that we spoke about before? Prikat tiskulim, that we saw on the top, page 154. That you have this natural tendency to break out of this terrible onus of anguish and despair, b'amirot kashot, and say words that are very, very harsh and challenging and even curses, but rather b'kar ruach kol dovah, to deal with everything as if you were objective and clear, l'gufo shel inyan. And imagine, well, this is my kal v'chomer that I'm just adding here, which I think the Rebbe is implying. If this is the way you have to act towards a non-Jewish governor who is persecuting Jews, how much more so do you have to act this way towards your fellow Jew? Now, I'm not saying that each and every one of us here has the ability to, if you want to pass this around for Hakofa Beis, right, has the ability to control our language, because we know how important every word is. You know, we don't have this endowment of Yaakov Avinu that God, you know, that God guarantees that everything that we do and everything that we say is going to come to pass. But nevertheless, the message is crystal clear. We have to somehow control our emotions, even in the most difficult times. And I say this in terms of Shalom Bayis, you know, when it comes to a husband and a wife, it's so difficult, you know, to... You know, you live with a woman 24/7, and not to get angry at a woman, you know, and she at you, and control your, you know, your language, your tongue, and somehow ladun lekafskus, and say that things that look on the surface that she did this to you and this, and yet there's something deeper behind it. Maybe, you know, they say about Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I wasn't there, so I can't testify that. At his wife's levaya, I think he was married to his wife for over 60 years, he did not fulfill the minhag of Yerushalayim. The minhag of Yerushalayim is that when a spouse loses a husband or a wife, the spouse goes over to the kever and asks for mechila. So the Talmidim asked, Rebbe, why didn't you ask for mechila from your wife? And he said, we were married, Baruch Hashem, for many years. We never had a spat. We never had a disagreement. Who could say that they went through one day of marriage, 1 hour of marriage, without having some sort of disagreement? And the man lives with his wife for 60 years, and he doesn't have to ask for chila because they never had a fight. They never had a disagreement. Again, you know, I'm not, you know, this is Yaakov Avinu, and that's from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, but where are we? You know what I'm saying? Like, there are people walking the earth and have this madrega of Malachi Asharis. I don't know. I'd kind of cough out. Now Rabosa.
Wife was the daughter of Eliyahu Levin.
Whose wife?
Rav Shlomo Zalman.
I didn't realize that. Everybody knows that, just me. I was the only one who didn't know that.
What's that?
That Rav Shlomo, he says Rav Shlomo Zalman's wife was the daughter of Eliyahu
Levin.
Oh, Rav Aryeh Levin. Oh, now I got you. Yeah, sure. Okay, Rav Bosa, part two for anyone who can hang in there. Okay. Yosef is thrown by his brothers where?
Into a bar.
Right. And a bar rim. The bar is empty. Ainbo mine. So the Gemara says in Shabbos, Rashi quotes it in Chumash, very famous. Why does it have to say a bar reik, ein bo mayim, ein yodesh ein bo mayim? You told me it's reik, it's empty. Ela, ein bo mayim is a mute, right? It doesn't have water in it. And you just told me it's reik means it has nothing in it. So ein mute el achavir el rabos is mayim ein bo aval nechoshim v'akrav in mish. So it has serpents and scorpions. Okay. Now, let's leave this on the side, and B'li Neder, if it works out, again, it's going to be a race against the clock. By the time the clock strikes noon, right, we will have a relationship between this parsha of Habar Reik, Aval Nashim V'akrovin, Nechoshim V'akrovin Yeshbo, and the story of Chanukah. So from now until the end of page 2, we're going to speak in Yirtz Hashem about Chanukah. Now, first of all, there's a very famous statement in the Medrash, everybody knows it by heart. The Medrash goes through all the different kingships that exist on this earth, the Arba Malchios, that subjugated the Jewish people throughout our bitter history. And all these four are alluded to in the story of creation. V'ha'aretz ha'isa sovavo v'choshech al p'nei atom. So the Gemara says, the Medrash says in the name of Reish Lakish, that Tohu is Golas Bavel, with a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Vohu is Golas Madai, which is more or less the story of Purim, and that's a pasuk in Esther. Vechoshech, you want to underline this, is Golas Yavan. What typifies and what defines the Yavanim? That's darkness. This was the first time in the history of the Jewish nation that another nation had persecuted them on a religious level to the extent in which it was life or death. Now look at the next famous line. So Meres Lahem, this is what the Greeks said to the Jewish people. Kisvu al keren ashar she'em lachem chelek bi Elokei Yisrael. Engrave it. Confess it. In a way that you can't obliterate it, you have no relationship to the God of Israel. And it's interesting, the word that I want you to underline so that we get back to our original topic of Yosef is the word shar.
What reference?
Shar is a reference to Yosef.
No.
Where?
The next to the last line in number three says hashar, the end of that line. Do you see the word shar?
Yes.
Now there are many ways in which you could inscribe something on parchment or even on the horns of animals back in those days, but why a shar, an ox? That's not your classical case of Karen. Okay, fine. Why is Yavan identified with Choshech, with darkness? Shech Shichai Neim Shal Yisrael. So Rabosai, from this point on, we are going to be focused on a pasuk in Zechariah. Zechariah is the Navi that foretells which bias? Bayis Sheni. He lives in a period of time between Churban Bayis Rishon and the building of Bayis Sheni. And much of what he says is a prophecy, not just on the immediate building of the Beis HaMikdash, but the years and years and decades and centuries afterwards, until, unfortunately, the second bias was destroyed. And he says the following, Ki darachti li Yehuda keshes milesi Ephraim. He refers here to Yehuda, which is the Shevet of Malchus, and Ephraim, who, of course, is the son of Yosef. And this really represents a complete form of the Geula, of the redemption of Israel, Yehuda and Ephraim. But what I want to point out to you is the last part of this pasuk. The orarti, I would translate the word orarti, is I have given strength. Literally it means to awaken or to stimulate somebody who's asleep. But God says through the prophet Zechariah, I've given this hisorus of Banayich, your children. And who is your children? You know, when you say your children, you're addressing someone. And Banayich is in feminine, Tzion. The sons of Zion, the sons of Tzion. Tzion is Lashon Nekeva. Banayich. And then it says, Al Banayich Yavan. Now Yavan, during the period of Bayis Sheni, is going to be the main adversary. And the children of Tzion are going to have to be awoken and strengthened in a battle against the children of Yavan. But the strange thing is, this phrase, Banayach Yavan, it should have said Al Yavan, or Keneged Yavan. And V'samtich, God promises, I will make you, Tzion, Kecherev Gibar, a strong, powerful sword, so that you will be able to overcome
the Banayach Yavan, and they, the Banayach Yavan, will succumb to Banayach Tzion. And on this pasuk in Zechariah, the psikta makes an equation to the mitzvah, you won't believe it, of Hadlokas Ner Chanukah. V'lama madlik neros bechanukah, ela b'shosh nitzchu banav shel Chashmonai kohen gadol malchus Yavan. At that moment is a hint to the mitzvah of Hadlokas Ner Chanukah, when the children of the Kohanim Gedolim, of the Kohen Gadol of Chashmonai, that's Fantasio, rise up against the kingship of Yavan, Shenemar, and the Psikta invokes this pasuk in Zechariah, Ve'orarti Vanaich Tzion al Vanaich Yavan. Rashi in Sefer Zechariah adds three words. Orarti Vanaich Tzion. What does it mean? I strengthened, I awakened the sons of Zion, Al-Khel, against the armies of Antiochus. Now, Rabosai, from here on, we're going to be learning the Torah of the Din of Arem, the Bnei Yisoschar. I'm not telling you that I understand everything the Bnei Yisoschar. He's very heavy into what's called Rimzei HaTorah, the allusions of the Torah. This is Chassidus on its most mathematical level. You don't have to know Gematrios until they're coming out of your ears. So if anybody has a calculator, it might come in handy at this point. He says the following, I don't understand the pasuk in Zechariah. What does it mean, V'kavu Shmonas Yimei Chanukah? Why is it called Chanukah? And there are many answers to this question. But the Rebbe wants to give his own insight into the name of Chanukah, based on this pasuk at the end of the Nevi'im in Zechariah and Novi, V'orarti V'anayach Tzion V'anayach Yavon Hisnabe Al Nes Chanukah. The Psikta says that this prophecy of Zechariah is related to the miracle of Chanukah. And the Psikta says, Loma Madlik Neros B'Chanukah Ela B'shah Shenitzchu Bonav Shal Chashmonai Kohen Gadol Malchus Yavan Shenemar V'artich Orarti Banayich Tzion Al Banayich Yavan Hine Yeshlis Bonin. I want to understand Lama Amar Banayich Tzion. Where does Tzion come into this picture? Velo Bnei Yisrael. There are many different phrases that describe the Jewish people. It's rare and perhaps only singular in this case where we find that the people of Israel are called Banayich Tzion. Why? How does that connect to the success and the victory of Banayich Tzion over Banayich Yavan and to the Chanukah and to the name Chanukah? So now at this point, the Bnei Yisoschar introduces another pasuk in Tanakh, a pasuk in Yirmiyah. Now the two words in this pasuk that I'm going to ask you to underline, which is in number 9, is Tzemach Tzadik. Harvey, did you find that? Tzemach Tzadik.
Yes.
Please underline those two words. Tzemach Tzadik. Both of these words start with what letter?
Tzadik.
For the Bnei Yisoschar, that's critical. And it's kind of rare that you have, I don't know, in English, I'm not sure if it's called onomatopoeia. Did you ever hear that word?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Shakespeare was famous for. You know, to use words that
sound like what
they're talking about. Yeah, and they start, you know, with the same letter. Maybe it's not called onomatopoeia. I forget what it's called.
There's alliteration, Rabbi.
Alliteration?
Yeah.
Okay.
Onomatopoeia, I believe, is when the word
sounds like, yeah. So that's not a good, sorry. I apologize for that. It's you know, I haven't studied Shakespeare in a long time. Anyway, so Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar says the following. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, this Rabbi Elazar Gol at Tana, he says, Chamesh Osios Shenichbalu Batorio. You'll find in five cases, in five letters, that you'll have two words that are contiguous that both start with the same letter. And they all have something in common. They all reveal something about the ultimate redemption. The first one is Avram Avinu. He was redeemed from the fires of Kazdin. And the pasuk says, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. So that's going to be two words that start with the same letter. Then he goes on to Yitzchak Avinu. Yitzchak Avinu is saved from the Plishtim. That's also redemption. And there it says, Lech me'imanu ki atzamta mimenu ma'od. What's mimenu ma'od? Mem and mem. And then we have Yaakov Avinu. He's...
Rabbi, before... I see here, Kaf, Kaf.
He doesn't quote the pasuk for Kaf. I don't know.
Oh,
I have to go back.
Was it perhaps Lech, you know, Lecha?
Oh, maybe. Maybe it's the Kaf at the end of the letter. At the end of the word. You're right. Then we get to Nun. What's the case of Nun? Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad esaf. Just 1 second. I'm just curious. I understood this morning, but now. I guess somehow the yud at the end of the word Hatzileni. I'm not sure why that yud is okay. Anyway, nun nun. Then he has pei fei, and that's pakod pakadeti eschem. That's the gula from Mitzrayim. Oh, but here's the one that we want to focus our attention. Tzadi tzadi. Bo asid hakadosh baruch hu ligol es Yisrael besof malchus revius. Now the malchus revius is called Yavan, and now we have the pasuk tzadok tzemach tzadik. And the two tzadis, lomar lahem tzemach tzimachti lachem. Now the word tzemach here is an allusion to the Mashiach, to the ultimate goel. Shenemar, hine ish tzemach shmo, umitachtov yitzmach ubona eseichel Hashem. Who's going to build the third bias? It's going to be someone by the name of Tzemach. That is the Melech HaMashiach. And the pasuk in Yirmiyah that has Tzemach Tzadik is a reference to the ultimate Geula at the end of time, and that's going to be the Geula from the Malchus HaRevius. Says the Bnei Yisosa, Mashe kasavti l'chosh l'shem hanes hanaseh v'ores or nisi hu or hagonus. The Bnei Yisosa says that there's some sort of supernal light that was hidden. It was created by God at the beginning of creation, but then it was hidden away, concealed. And every miracle that happens on the behalf of Klal Yisrael is going to be some sort of light, a miraculous light that comes from the Or HaGadlus. It comes from the concealed world. And every time there's going to be this gilui, this revelation of the Or HaNisi, of this miraculous light, it's going to be a chinuch. Chinuch means a preparation. L'geula achrona. For the ultimate redemption, she is gala ha'or agonis b'mi'ulo v'tuvo. That's when the ultimate revelation of the Or HaGadlus, the concealed light, which will allow us to see everything and understand everything, that's going to happen at the end of days, at the time of Mashiach. V'yodom tzofe bo misof olove ad tzofa. The Gemara in Chagiga says that with that Or HaGadlus, man could see from one end of the universe to the other end of the universe. V'novu b'neichem u'b'noseichem. And somehow the Pesuk in Yoel indicates that even your children will be able to prophesy. That's how heavy and intense and profound will be this Gili, this revelation of the Or HaGadlus. And now he quotes the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar that we saw here earlier about the five letters, Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, Chaf, all of which allude to the ultimate redemption. And the Chaf, Chaf, and Gershon, you were right and I was wrong. I said it was the Lamed Lamed. It's the Chaf Chaf of Lech Lecha. The Chaf at the end of these two letters, these two words that are contiguous. Pirish Bo Nigalu Avoseinu Mitzrayim. Pei Pei is the Pakod Pakadati for the Geula of our forefathers from Mitzrayim. Tzadi Tzadi Bo Asidim Ligoel. And that's Tzemach Tzadik, which is the Pasuk in Yirmiyah. Hina Leos ha'ora zed nikba l'doros lihenos mi'oro kol yimei meshach golus ha'oroch hazeh. He says that even though we don't see this, there's no revelation of this light, but nevertheless that light is there in a concealed form, and we are benefiting from that light during the entire history of our bitter exile. Ad until ultimately Tzemach Tzadik Yitzmach Tzemach Tzadik. Now these are days that are called Chanukah. Why? Chanukah is Miloshen Chinuch, which means preparation. So we assume it means preparing the candelabra, because that's what they had to do because it became Tameh. No, the Bnei Yisrael wants to have his own original idea. The word Chanukah means Loshen Chinuch, which means preparation, and the miracles, which are revelations of the Araganus, are preparations in which they give us a little bit of a glimpse, a preview of Tzemach Tzadik, of the ultimate Geula. Alkein Timtza Tzion. If you take a look at the word Tzion, right, it says here in the Poskim Zechariah Bonayach Tzion, Nosaf Os Tzadi Al Osios Yavon. You can take apart the word Tzion, leaving the Tzadi on one side, and then you're left with what word for the balance of the word Tzion?
Yavan.
So the Tzadi represents the Tzemach Tzadik who's going to vanquish Yavan. Lahoros, and this teaches us Shanes Hazeh Hanase Bior Hanisi, this miracle of being able to triumph against and subdue Yavan is already a Ar Nisi, which means a revelation, an extension of the original Ar Agonus, which brings about the downfall of Yavan. And this will prepare us for the ultimate Tzemach Tzadik, which means the Mashiach and the ultimate Geula. V'zeu v'orarti b'nayech Tzion, again, because Tzion is a reference to the Tzadi of the Tzadik who's defeating the Yud Vav Nun of Yavan. And here you want to turn to the other page. And he says that this is why, if you take the word Chanukah, now I need somebody to work this out for me very quickly, okay? The Nun is 50, the Chaf is 20, is 70. Now, if you take the He, you're up to 75, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then, what did I leave out here? The Chet and Vav, which is 14, how much is that? Is 6 and 8 is 14. 14 and 75 is how much?
89.
You got to 89?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Can I rely on you, David, that Chanukah is 89? Hello? This is not going to be good here because we don't have that much time here. Let's see. 8 plus 50 is 58. And 6, how much is 58 and 6? Is 64 and 25?
84.
Is 89. Wow. David, you were right. And so was the Bnei Yisrael. Okay. So Chanukah is 89. Now Tzadi is 90. But we have a rule in Gematria called Shema Kolel. What does that mean? That means whenever you want to indicate that the word goes above something, meaning it swallows up something, so you add the number 1, which indicates the entire word. So again, a word is made up of individual letters and the word itself. So the word itself gives you 1, and the letters give you whatever it is. So Tzion is you take, let's see, what is Tzion? Just one second. Ah, I see. The Tzadi is going to defeat Yavan, correct? That's what we said, that we took the word Tzion, and the Tzemach Tzadik is the Tzadi, that the double Tzadi indicates the Geula, and that's going to be the force that's going to defeat Yavan, and we celebrate Chanukah as the defeat of Yavan with the letter Tzadi, because Tzadi is Keneged Chanukah, because not only is it the individual letters, but it's also the word itself. So the individual letters are 89, that's Chanukah, and then we take the Shem Kolel, which is number 1, and then we get the number Tzadi, the number 90. And therefore he says, Lahadlik Ner Chanukah is Lahadlik Yechaven Ima Kolel. V'zeu she'tiknu b'nusach ha'odah v'kavu shmonas yimei Chanukah. It doesn't say shmoni yimei Chanukah. Shmonas means that it's linked up to another number, which is Tzion. So again, Chanukah is 89, the Tzadi of Tzion is 90, and if we take Chanukah together as one entity, we get the number 90 by adding the Kolel, and that means that the Tzadi is going to be the force that defeats the enemy, in this case Yavan, the last three words, of the word of Tzion, and that is what Chanukah is all about. So we're gonna celebrate Chanukah as a stage that brings about what? That projects us forward towards what goal? The ultimate Geula. And the ultimate Geula is going to come through Tzemach Tzadik, as Yirmiyah said in the Navi, and that's the Tzion, the Banayach Tzion that are defeating Banayach Yavan. And the Gemara tells us that the unique dimension of Purim is that Purim is the end of a period of miracles, but Chanukah is only the beginning of a miracle. It's not the complete miracle. That's why we have no book in Tanakh which we read on Chanukah like we do on Purim. Says the Sfas in number 12, that's because Chanukah is really a preparatory stage. It's the introductory stage to the ultimate Geula, which is going to take place through the agency of Tzemach Tzadik, and that Tzemach Tzadik is the Tzadi that's going to bring about the ultimate Gul against Yavan, and that represents the completion of Chanukah. So we only have the beginning of Chanukah now, because Chanukah is Miloshon Chinuch. Chinuch means what? Preparation, but it's not the ultimate. We haven't yet gone around. And now we're going to do some more gematrios here in number 14. This is Rav Matisyahu Glazer, so he applies some of the older gematrios and extends them. He says the nevuah of Zechariah at the end of the book of Zechariah that we've been speaking about, Orarti, Banayach, Tzion, etc., etc. This is a remez to Chanukah, because Tzion is the same number as Chanukah with the Shema Kolel. Bo, on Chanukah, Nitzcha Kedushas Tzion, there's a battle here, a confrontation between sanctity, which is called Tzion, and Tumah, and contamination, which is called Yavan. So there's Tzion against Yavan. The Tzadi of Tzion is representative of Tzidkus, right? If you go back to the pasuk, it says in Yirmiyah, Tzemach Tzadik. Tzadik means righteousness. So it's the righteousness of Klal Yisrael, of Tzion, that's going to destroy the Tumah of Yavan. And then he quotes the Malsur a few times over here, which we won't go into now. And he says that the Tzadik is the righteous person, but the word Tzadik has another meaning. What's the other meaning of the word Tzadik? It's a letter in the alphabet, right? Tzadik is a letter in the alphabet. We call it a Tzadi, but it's really Tzadik. And he says that the Tzadik, which is numbered Tzadi, is a remez to the Shlita, the control, and the Kibush of Yavan, to control and subjugate Yavan. And he goes on and says something amazing. He says that the letters of Yavan are this, if you re-scramble them, are the same letters of the word Noi. What does Noi mean? Beauty. Yavan represents beauty, and that's called Yaft Elokim Liyefes, right? Because Yefes is the father of Yavan, and Yaft means Yofi or Noi or beauty. So the Greeks put all their emphasis on external and physical beauty. But the word Tzion, on the other hand, if we calculate, and I'm going to need your help here, David, is 156. Is that correct? Right? 90 and 10 is 100. 50
and 6.
And 6 is 156. And that's Yosef. Yosef represents Tzion here in the battle against Yavan, because Yosef is also 156, if you'll calculate it. Yosef Atzad. So therefore, what is Yosef? Yosef are the powers of good and righteousness against the powers of evil. And in order to battle against someone, the more civil you are, the more sharp the confrontation is. And Yosef represents the biggest confrontation, because Yosef represents Yofi. And how do I know that Yosef represents Yofi? That's number 20 on your page. Because it says, Vayehi Yosef Yefei Tor V'Yefas Mara. He was beautiful, Yosef. And that got him into trouble, by the way. But in any event, at the end of the brachas in Zosah Brach, that's number 16, Yosef is called the Shar. Bechor Shar Hadolo. And Yosef's beauty is represented by the Shar. The Shar is considered a very beautiful, strong animal. And now Yosef is going to be the force against Yavon, because they're very similar. Yavon represents Yefes and Yofi. And now Yosef represents Yofi, because he is the Yefei Tor Yefas Mara. And now it's the forces of Kedusha to use Yofi for the good things, for sanctified things, sacred things, and force and battle against whom? Against Yavon. Now, what we don't have time for, and I apologize for this, is in number 17. If you get a chance, you'll see that the Nachash and the Akrav, those are the two beings that the Mazikim, you know, those dangerous beings that crawl the earth, that represent Yavon. Again, for that you'd have to look over number 17, which is really heavy Chassidus. And therefore, what the brothers didn't realize, going back to the first source on that page, page 1, that they threw Yosef into a bar. And what they didn't realize was that throwing Yosef into a bar was putting Yosef into tremendous danger from the Nechashim and the Akravim that represent what? Yavon, the tomb of Yavon. And we got to get Yosef out of the bar so that he could battle against Yavon, because ultimately the secret of success here in the battle against Yavon is going to be the Tzemach Tzadik. And that tzaddik is a reference to Yosef. Yosef is called Yosef HaTzaddik, and he's going to battle against Yavon. He's going to be the one who's dedicated to Tzion. And Banayach Tzion, the children or the descendants of Yosef, which will be the Mashiach ben Yosef, they are going to vanquish, ultimately, the fourth Malchus. They're going to bring about the ultimate Geula. So Chanukah, which represents the number Tzion, is a chinuch, Miloshen chinuch, to prepare us by strengthening ourselves in Kedusha, in sanctity, in Torah, and purity, to guard and intensify our abilities to defeat Yavon, which represents the Nechashim, the Akravim. They personify the Tumah of Yavon, and Amir Sashem, this will bring about the rebuilding of Yerushalayim. If you take a look at Eicha, which is in number 22, you will see that Vayaniu Rosham al Bas Yerushalayim, that the enemies of the Jewish people will attack Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim is considered Klilas Yofi. Yerushalayim represents the ultimate paradigm of beauty. Beauty in a spiritual sense, not just superficial, skin-deep beauty, which is all physical. And that's why the Gemara says in Masechta Kiddushin that there were 10 measures of Yofi, of beauty, that came down from Shamayim, and Yerushalayim took 9 out of the 10. So our battle is the battle of our Yofi, of our Yerushalayim, against their Yofi, the Yofi of Yefes, of Yavon, and Amir Tzashem, the Tzadik, which represents the Tzion, the Tzadi of Tzion, will vanquish with the Tara and the Kedusha of Tzion and Yerushalayim the Tuma of Yavon, until finally we'll see that Yerushalayim will be the capital of the people of Israel, and it'll be the Klilas Yofi L'chol Aretz B'mheira B'yameinu, the Geula Shlema that Chanukah is the harbinger of B'mheira B'yameinu. Amen.